Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show. It's that time at the 8 o'clock hour on a Wednesday evening, and you have reached the Kay Thompson Live Show live. That's right. It's live again. I am the person that's commonly known as the son or also Citizen Payne. Thank you very much. All right, and here's the lady of the hour, the host of the show, Kay Thompson Live. Here you go, Kay.
Thank you, Eric. How are you? Now it's everybody out there. We do have a good show for you. Bob Law, but he's going to be on next week. He had been scheduled an important other engagement, and I think that conflicted. So Bob Law is going to be on next week.
Why was he going to come on?
And I'm just getting to that era. And as a matter of fact, what he wanted me to do was to talk about the National Black Leadership Alliance. They are involved with launching a fund to raise money to sustain and support the existing black independent schools throughout our country, which are extending and providing our excellent education for the growing numbers of family and a growing number of, you know, family members who are turning to them to provide a truly meaningful education for our children, their children. These independent schools, by the way, that are in place and getting to be a little bit more in place at different places around the country, rarely expel or turn away students for lack of a tuition. So therefore, to date, the name of that program, I think, is GRACE. So GRACE has been able to, you know, garnish modest amounts of funds to a limited number of schools. And we need to increase what we can offer to those schools as well as increase the numbers of schools that we support. And this is a problem, says Bob, and of course we all know that, providing the opportunities for quality education for our students in the United States under the leadership of the Alliance.org. So the National Black Leadership Alliance.org. So for more information, you can get in touch with them and ask Bob for more information or anybody in the Alliance office.
Okay.
So Bob will be joining us next week, to explain further about this.
All right. Let's just take this off the speaker and put that up to your ear there. Just a little technical here. Put that phone up to your ear and talk into it that way. It'll be easier for us to hear a little bit. And I'm going to bring in one of our co-hosts, Mr. Byron Saunders. Brother Byron, how you doing this evening? Reporting from out and abroad. Byron Saunders, how you doing, sir?
Well, yes, out and abroad. I'm in Washington, D.C., on my way to Atlanta to see family and then, of course, go down to Montgomery, Alabama to the Equal Rights Initiative to see the lynching memorial, do some interviews, and report back to Kay Thompson Live with an interview from that site in a couple of weeks. So that I'm excited. I like the initiative of the educational moment that is being spearheaded by Bob Law and others. And I'm reminded of the history of what happened during Reconstruction of the educational outreach and actually the initiatives to bring education as to the forefront in the African-American community. And it's nice to see that initiative that got started during Reconstruction is now elevating itself to reaching out to recreate schools that will teach our children and give them a quality education. And boy, do we need it, because there are a lot of people in our country that are stuck on stupid and parked on dumb.
Yeah, I hear you, Byron.
So, but today,
you're such a wise guy, but you're really very involved and you know a lot. So tell us more.
Well, today I did, for the first time, you know, I grew up in Washington, D.C., and I hadn't had a chance to come and see the Martin Luther King Memorial site. It's very moving. And it's very, it's a moment. It's a moment in which, because I've been to the new Smithsonian African American History Museum, and it's really special. But to start my trip visiting the Martin Luther King site is really, to me, a wonderful moment to continue my own historic journey of bringing history, bringing our history to folks on the Kay Thompson Live Show. So here we go. Oh, and today, of course, historically, is the anniversary of Charlottesville. Today's the historic of Charlottesville.
Yeah, talk about that.
The Charlottesville Massacre, and ultimately, you know, of course, 1 year ago, the a white Aryan nation, Ku Klux Klan, visited Charlottesville, Virginia, to demonstrate, and violent demonstration ended up in a riot where white folks went kind of wilding and yeah, of course there were good people on both sides, but the event ended up with the tragic killing and injuring of several people who were there to protest against racism and white supremacy. And I it's interesting because I did go see the Spike Lee new movie. I went to a screening
of it.
You did?
No kidding.
Yeah.
Hey, Byron, let me just put a pause in it real quick for us to bring Wayne into, Wayne Gilman, our other co-host, into this discussion. And Byron's going to continue on, but we want to welcome our other co-host, Mr. Wayne Gilman, to the show. Wayne
Good
Gilman.
Evening, everyone. And
hey, Wayne.
Let me not interrupt Byron Saunders.
There
were good people in that on both sides, you know.
Yeah,
but we were better.
We were better. That's right. So the movie.
Continue.
The movie is incredible. You get that sense of surrealness, obviously, because it's taking us back to a moment where most Americans, not alone African Americans, but most Americans would never really think that there was an opportunity for an African American to infiltrate the Ku Klux Klan in a manner in which they, a true story. But Spike's take on it, like usual, Spike Lee's taking surreal opportunities to create real opportunities, and the ending is so powerful because it connects that moment. Oh, it's stunning, because it takes Charlottesville and brings the story full forward to yesterday. And today is, of course, the anniversary of Charlottesville. And when you see those images and how he's woven it into the final part of his film, you sit there stunned. It is just
Do you know
that
one thing? I was really waiting for Spike, because the fact that, you know, he sort of disappeared from view for a while, you know, after, you know, the first set of movies, and then he sort of, I guess, gathered his creative, you know, thoughts together and something to come out with something spectacular. Yeah. Tell us more about the film.
Well, and the thing is, that's really interesting, because now that we've had Black Panther and its success, it's this movie, very much like Black Panther, which nobody really anticipated, plays specifically and even more importantly to an African-American audience and an American audience, because it's from a point of view that most of the people from the other side, Caucasians, will see a side that they think is all theirs with respect to law and order. And it's amazing, because you're sitting there watching Denzel Washington's son, who's very good. He's very well cast. Young lady, the young woman who plays his girlfriend, who's in the Black Student Union, very well acted. I mean, cast-wise, excellent cast, great storyline, very well written. The cinematography is very extraordinary, very extra special. Because
waiting to see it.
You know, Byron, if I could just throw in my two cents here, having worked with Spike.
Yes, sir.
Now, two things about this. First, let me talk about Denzel's son, since that's where you left off. Yeah, his work, if you've been watching John David Washington in a show called Ballers, his work is really pretty good. And he's standing out, making a name of him for himself. separate from his dad, because I didn't know that was him. If anybody had watched this HBO series starring The Rock, where Denzel's son plays an plays a pro football player, a wide receiver, and he also did play football for professional football for a short time. In this movie, I can see, just from the trailers I've seen, I'm going to go see it, his kind of character, his essence of kind of a quirky kind of character, leading man, seems to work really well for this type of work and for the type of work that Spike does. Secondly, my mom talked about Spike kind of dropped from the scene. He kind of hasn't been as relevant over the years. But these are times now that are perfect for Spike's type of sensibility. If you remember when he first came out, She's Got to Have It, and then Do the Right Thing, I think during the Bush administration, Clinton administration, certain times in our history are, what I've noticed, and having worked with this brother, are fit his narrative, fit this is the time, such as this is the time for a Spike Lee film, let me put it that way, in the climate of the country now with Donald Trump as president and all of the lunacy that's going on with him. Now is the time for a Spike Lee movie. And I think it's very appropriate that this is the one. And it's really ironic that, you know, just the way the timing of it and everything. And certainly the story is fantastic when you learn about that this true story that his brother was able to fool the Klan.
fool David Duke, of all people, okay? That's the part
that's
amazing.
This sounds absolutely fascinating now.
I happened to see a trailer of it today on MSNBC, and I was wondering how did if they put a gentleman in I guess whiteface to infiltrate the Klan, was it that way, or did they just get people, progressive whites, to participate in the process of infiltration? That part lost me. You know, I was just
without giving away the whole film. It's a bait and switch with an African American police in a small town
in
Colorado, playing a undercover person, but working with another fellow white police officer, in which the name is switched to make his cover, but together the two of them infiltrate using his original name in the film, but using it with a white male playing the role in the Klan part.
Wow.
But it worked.
Mm-hmm.
It is very well done.
Wow.
And to realize
he got a white cop to be him when he had to go meet the guys.
Yes.
That's basically the real story. The brother talked to him on the phone.
Right.
Then when it was time for face-to-face, he got a white cop to work with him to go meet him. That's in the trailer,
right.
So we're not really giving anything away.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, but you still have to watch it, because as they come to the climax, which is really a very powerful scene itself, and then you get the epilogue, which is the final piece that Spike brings Charlottesville right to the end, so that you can connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you can miss the connection of then to last year with this episode that happened. It's powerful. You sit there, and this is when you really know a film is good. And I was sitting with film critics at a screening. It couldn't have been no more than 25, 30 people at the most.
Mm-hmm.
They applaud at the end. And I was like, wow. And this is only about a handful of black
people. I will certainly see that.
Yeah.
I will certainly see this film this week.
Yeah.
Boy, it sounds really, really, really.
I was just going to say, I hope it has a profound impact on the sensibilities of Americans, because, you know, I think Spike has been out there. I mean, he tried last year to draw attention to the issues of killings in Chicago, but for some reason, that film just didn't resonate, because we still have, just this past weekend, I think we had 70-something people shot in America's third largest city, It just saddens me that, we have the subject matter to work with, you know. I mean, brilliant guy, and he's been around for a long time. And I think sometimes Spike doesn't real apart from what the media plays about his fascination with the New York Knicks, you know, I don't think he gets the recognition that he deserves, you know. And then there's some who feel that he's arrogant, he's this, he's that, and a third. I don't know. That's what I've heard. I mean, what I know of Spike, in my times interviewing him, I never got that impression.
No, he can be very humble at times, and yet, why not? You know, if he's Spike Lee. He deserves to take credit for what he's created and done. His films have been iconic, you know.
Yeah, and sometimes when you have a black man who speaks up loud, clear, and directly and to the point, they call him arrogant. And that is certainly Spike is one that, you know, not only in front of the camera to bring these stories to the forefront in an attempt to do that, but also behind the camera in terms of improving the opportunities of African Americans that work behind the camera. A lot of people got in the union because of Spike that were traditionally left out. And so that's really what the importance of him is that he speaks up loud and clear for the advancement of people in this business. And sometimes over the years in the beginning, he hasn't always been correct, and he hasn't taken the right route about it. Sometimes some of us there were supporters of him would agree, and sometimes we would disagree. But certainly his mentality from when the very first time that I met him, that he was what they call nowadays a woke brother from a long time ago. So Spike is certainly, that's why he is, you know, who he is, and a cultural phenomenon to come along when he came along. And fortunately, I was able to be a part of that renaissance to revitalize black film. He did, I think, kind of single-handedly, at least, at that for that short period of time, to revitalize African-American movie making.
Right. Clearly, yeah.
And when you look at his catalog of films, you're absolutely right, Eric. They start off with a simple barbershop story and elevate to Malcolm X, his Brooklyn stories, the Four Little Girls bombing to this particular movie. And yes, it's a catalog rich in storytelling, but rich in bringing to life stories. That as I sat there at the end of the film, Mike Sargent said, "Well, what did you think?" I said, "This film should have been made 30 years ago." And the reason why I said it like that is because when you think about all the cop films that we've had to endure, comedies, cop stories, you know, Hill Street Blues cop stories. I mean, there have been so many cop stories that have given us this Law and Order theme I even said, remember Car 54, Where Are You? That was like a comic routine of two cops, you know, in Brooklyn, in
the Bronx. The Bronx,
right? You remember because it's our time.
Yeah,
you
we're
know?
Old.
We're old. But when you think about the number of cop movies that have been made, how many of them actually have been made with a storyline this dynamic?
Yeah.
Think about
really?
It.
Really? Wow. Mm-hmm.
But,
I'll have
you know,
to see it.
Byron, at the same time, and not to cut you off, Kay, but I think America was probably not ready for that. I mean, we're talking Car 54, the early 60s. We're still on the heels of Emmett Till. The civil rights movement was busting at its seams. You know, the Kennedy and King assassination and all that. Yeah, we should have been in their face, and we were in a different kind of way. But, you know, our explosion on the screen.
In the way of the backseat in handcuffs.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Well, listen,
you know.
Wayne.
So it's taking a while to turn around.
All right. Listen, you guys. When we were over at WLIB-BLS, all those years covering all these stories, okay, that black radio station was ahead of its time. All right, because a lot of these stories were right on the air, and we were right in the midst of them. Okay, and you both all know about all the different stories about cop killings and, you know, that kind of negative feeling going in and out of New York, and the black community, black art community, going through so much stuff. So, you know, there is a background for it. It's about time. I'm going to see this. As a matter of fact, I'll probably see it maybe today and tomorrow or the next day because I have not seen it and I want to see it.
Well,
it's
your
out.
To see it.
It's already out, that I'm assuming. Or
I know.
Just preview.
It opens this week. So this is the week
good.
That it opens.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the interesting thing to me, Byron, you had mentioned, you guys were talking about how, you know, seeing cops on film and that kind of evolution and what better storyline for this to happen. But, you know, it's just ironic that you happen to mention this because talk about TV series, right, and the type of material that needs to be made for TV series, something that's ongoing, something that the characters are running from but they need to accomplish and it takes them a long period of time, right? You want the right type of material for a TV series. And you know, you talked about the stories of our stories being told once we started being included in these storylines, which created even more ripe stories, right? And I was thinking, what's better material or foundation for a TV series than slaves trying to run to freedom, right? And if you remember that series that was just on last year or whatever, I forget the name of it now, it was about slavery and these runaway slaves in the Underground Railroad and how they were trying to run this, get the freedom. And one person went back and he had to go back and get his wife.
That's right.
What better material, what better foundation for a TV series, right? People running to freedom, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, that's over time. That's something, that's a storyline you can develop over 3 or 4 seasons because we know it took 400 or 500 years for us to get free, right? And it's even a better, better fodder for a TV series than, say, white folks running on the beach or, you know, or them wanting to be doctors and try to manage their love life at the same time. You know, all of these played storylines that feature them that are tired and they keep trying to retread them. You know, that's why they have these TV series now that they're bringing these series back. Roseanne, right? Murphy Brown, which Murphy Brown is more democratic, but they keep recycling their old storylines. That's why people ask me if I ever saw Game of Thrones. Hell no, I didn't see Game of Thrones. I've seen that before. Medieval white people. I've seen that movie before. Been watching it since I was a kid.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
I've seen this story. You know,
so
it's
let
the
me
same
see a
thing
different
with,
story.
That's right, Lord of the Rings. And you watch 5 Lord of the Rings to realize it's all about the gold in the mountain. Who wants to keep all the gold? Really? Really, people? That story's not new. That story
is
so old.
But that had some basis. It was an old book. That has some basis. Now you got that. Now you want to have Game of Thrones. You want to have Gladiator. And then you want to change the factual description identity of the people. You didn't want to make the people factual. You know?
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so when they make the Trump movie, they make Trump black.
Hey, that's a bit of a stretch, but I mean, the deal is I know that they probably would do that, you know. But what is your take on the reality TV phenomenon, though, Eric?
I think that reality TV, it's interesting in certain aspects, like when you talk about the world's most dangerous job or whatever, about fishing in the crab, king crab fishing on the Bering Sea. Things like that, they're educational. I find it incredible.
Yeah.
Things where
right.
people are encouraged to show their worst behavior, and they get more airtime, are really embarrassing. The only saving grace is that nowadays it's equal opportunity embarrassment. It ain't just the black people that are showing looking like fools. You know, the white people are in on it. Everybody's in on it. So at least there's parity along those lines. You know, so from that aspect, I say go on, because when I watch them, you know, when my sister's watching the Hip Hop Wives or my mom does that, I mean, those are guilty pleasures that we all have, but I can't do it. I can't listen to them talk, can't hear them talk about the mundane self-absorption in their lives.
Well, I find a comedic relief sometimes, and I'm not one to watch, you know. I mean, it's like you were talking about these retreads of the old shows that came out 20 years ago, finding popularity now. I think there's so much boredom out there within the greater part of Hollywood and the television industry that reality TV, I mean, the decadent part of reality TV, like what you just cited, has it's an outgrowth of boredom, you know.
Yeah. Right, but also,
but,
too,
I mean, if,
it's also, go ahead, Wayne, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, if you're providing something scientific or something that's related to discovery or, you know, global warming or, you know, Shark Week is a big thing with me because I see the
right.
ones that swim and the two-legged ones around me. But apart from that, man, you know, I have no use for it.
Well, you know, I was going to say, the thing about it is that the network TV, the main networks, they're the ones doing this old, tired stuff because that's the last bastion of traditional America, right? That's why
right.
there's more interesting
right.
things online, on the Internet, because they're willing to take chances, tell those stories of that we talked about of other people, of other perspectives, and that's what keeps it fresh because, you know what, all of those storylines they're telling, there's a whole bunch of people that reflects, that have not mm-hmm. seen themselves like we did, like we used to do back in the day, you know, when a black person came on TV, you tried to yell out everybody in the house, come down quick, because one of us is on TV. You know,
right.
because
right.
we were so happy
yeah.
to see ourselves reflected on this thing that we, this thing that's forced down our throat, you know, this society, this culture. And when we don't see ourselves
yeah.
reflected in this culture, obviously you're going to turn to something that does reflect you in the culture. And so that's why all these other platform outlets for content are kicking the network's butt. I'm talking about ABC, NBC, CBS. They might have a hit here and there. And if you notice, a lot of their bigger hits over the last few years have included diverse casts. Scandal.
Absolutely.
Grey's Anatomy,
yeah.
written by a black woman. This
China.
Is Us. This Is Us, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Strong interracial thing, big thing about that. So these are all things that, you know, they're pushing the boundaries. And obviously, look what happens. Oh, people are responding. And those are shows that everybody's watching. Why? Because everybody wants
now,
to see something a little different. They're tired of the old stuff.
Except
now,
in the red states.
Right. Well, even in the red states, I think there's this a notion of being tired of seeing rewashed, done things. Because in the Spike's movie, they actually show at a Klan meeting, they're showing Birth of a Nation, and they're going crazy, you know. The white Klansmen are going crazy, loving everything that they're seeing in Birth of a Nation, the D.W. Griffith's version. Now, what was real surreal, and you have to imagine this, I just come out of watching Spike Lee's new movie, and I'm walking across the street from the Bryant Park Hotel, walking into Bryant Park, and what you know is playing on the film, on the grass, on the lawn, packed with a lot of people, the Wiz.
Wow.
Can you imagine? Right, right.
Yeah.
Right.
How many years ago now we're talking?
See? And that's what, that became one of the more surreal moments. It's like walking from Spike movie right into watching The Wiz in Bryant Park in the outdoor show.
Wow.
Packed.
Amazing.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. It couldn't make that up if I wanted to.
Amazing. Just,
oh,
yeah.
Come on, bro.
Oh,
you gotta let him. You gotta let him dream before you give him the reality, bro.
I
gotta let him dream when you break their heart with the real world.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, reality is a real bitch, boy. I tell you.
Oh boy. Indeed.
So let's move to
that
our
was
favorite subject.
Yeah. Uh oh.
Let's move to our favorite subject. You know, you were over there in D.C. Where your president lives and. So I haven't really, you know, I've been catching snippets of the news because I've been a little busy, but did he sell out his son? Did he, collusion is not a crime? We're on like serious merry-go-round. And it's
what's interesting in the Mueller investigation and the trial that on this evening's news, there was conversation about Mueller and the Gates, his partner, influencing and peddling in the higher
Manafort.
Chain of the GOP. That's right. Manafort and Gates influencing their peddling to all of the hierarchy of the GOP during the convention. And the conversation is now taking on, and especially in D.C., I found this really interesting, when the news talking heads talk about connecting that to treason, that's the part that's really going way past collusion, because treason is the language that they need to be speaking on. We know it's treason, and it's got, all right, start connecting these dots so that the rest of the country can actually understand and comprehend the money laundering that went on was including treason in the highest rankings of the GOP, not just Trump, but the entire GOP structure.
I agree. It's an agenda with them. I mean, they could care less. They think that they're above the law. They have their one network that espouses their beliefs. Even if they get someone like the Harvard attorney, I'm blanking his name out now.
Dershowitz.
Now, he is a Democratic liberal, voted for Hillary Clinton. But because he knows the law, and he has said things that might be beneficial towards Trump, they make a big issue of it, but they cloud the fact. I mean, I'm glad now that we've gotten to the point where the news cycle is talking about treason, because this was a collective effort. It wasn't just Donald Trump alone, you know.
Yeah.
But you can't get any of his current nor his former attorneys to come forward to talk about treason. That administration would have to clean house to make the place whole again.
Completely. I agree.
That administration would have to clean house. That we'd have to get rid of that whole administration.
That's what I mean to say.
Yeah, we'd have to get rid of. They'd have to all be impeached and arrested and indicted to get. I mean, you know, this is you know, shows you that there's really no rules in America, right? I mean, this is the curtain being pulled back of America being the type of place really that says do as I say, not as I do. And that's from the people with money and power speaking to the masses of people. And they fooled the masses of people in thinking that, yeah, you go out there and vote and we're for you and we're gonna have your best interests at hand, and they have none of that. They have none of that, and they have no problem cheating, lying, and stealing, because that's what they did. And as you said, Byron, it's been revealed that it goes to the rankings of the Republican Party. But we already know that. We've seen them being willing to cheat. It's clear.
Right.
I mean, they break the rules. I mean, you know, that's how this guy, that's how he's got this Supreme Court pick now, because they broke the rules.
They broke the rules, exactly.
And didn't allow Obama to have his nominee. They don't care about the rules. They just tell you they do, and the idiots that go along to believe that they bet on that, there's always going to be idiots in our society and racists who are so stupid and their hatred overcomes their intellect, what little they have, and certainly what little common sense that they claim to have with the homespun, plain spoken. It's like I keep continue to say, here's what we're going to do for you guys. We're going to send you to college so you make better decisions. Since we're talking about a bunch of non-college educated people, you know, because the complexities of the world are more than just I see that person, I hate that person, you know. And this is, I mean, we have so many, the educational level in our country is so unbelievable that the average person does not know what's going on. They don't even understand the process, man. You know?
That's right.
There is an imbalance.
There's a story on tonight's news in Washington on NBC about finding snakes in the library at Georgetown University. And so when you parenthetically, you talk about the swamp, you got a bunch of educated snakes in this town. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
That's probably something interesting.
That's right.
Now, listen, you guys. I will talk about the snakes now, okay? Because I am so bored. I am absolutely bored with this conversation about that idiot in the White House. You're not going to do anything about him. Initially, when he declared that he was going to run for the presidency, I said he reminds me of some old footage of Adolf Hitler.
Yeah,
and I haven't changed in that. Okay?
Say
no more. This goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And nothing seems to be done about him in the White House. Okay? So the thing is to get out the vote, you say it over and over and over again. But no one is really, really riving up the black community, as far as I can see, to really get them really very that excited about getting out the vote.
Yeah, I'm gonna.
I'm telling you.
I don't know if I'm gonna completely agree with that because I think that a lot of black people see that this man is really.
Well, we got to make a big step. We got to, you know, really, you know, get on the ball here.
Well, it's not November,
Kay.
We still have a few more months before we get there.
Yeah, sure.
But I
think that Ohio contest
spoke volumes, even though, you know, it didn't work in the favor of the Democrats. It was a close contest, and it just goes to show that the Republicans cannot take even their base for granted.
Right. Well, I mean, the president is not making it hard for making it easy for them, but even in a close case scenario, that's what I'm talking about. We can't afford close races because they cheat.
Yeah,
they will cheat their way to victory.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a close race, then they're going to cheat. Unless you have an equal number of Democrats in the room with Republicans counting the votes. I think my opinion is that we need to go back to a paper ballot system because it's too easy to hack this electronic system. And if you see Trump talking about trying to set up things to say, talk about the system is rigged and by the Democrats and hope he doesn't lose by the rigged system that the Democrats, he's always already priming his minions to believe that.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And they can't answer in complete sentences, much less understand the complexities of what's going on. You know,
absolutely. Well, one thing is certain with the indictment of the Collins, the Republican from New York, arrested today for influence peddling in the stock exchange. And oh, my gosh, that's the big next big story is they're bringing down all of these individuals and especially Republicans in that 1% crowd that has. Done some very nefarious things in the Ponzi schemes of course,
mm-hmm.
it's legal in New York, and the Ponzi schemes that are legal in Las Vegas. So, I mean, our
mm-hmm.
country is unraveling at the seams because it is based in hypocrisy, based in racism, based in a kind of autocracy that is them only and lead the rest of us. I mean, this administration wants to give another tax cut to the rich, and this last tax cut has already exploded our budget by $1.3 trillion more. I mean, what part of this economy that they keep saying is running at top speed is really cooking the books? We are being told facts and figures that are cooking the books. It's so plain to see.
Well, you're absolutely
right,
Byron. You know, I agree. We have not felt the impact of what Donald Trump has done in the last 2 years yet. You know, they're talking about how there's almost virtually no unemployment. You know, something that started on the backbones of Barack Obama but played favorably because of what was handed to Trump at the end of Obama's term. And then you talk about the tariffs, the impact of the global economy, what's going on in places like China, the revolts that are taking place in the third world now because of suddenly we have a political imbalance in this country, you know. So and then the damage on the legal aspect, as you just said, cited or Eric cited with the Supreme Court, you know what they did with the previous. Obama appointee for the Supreme Court. You know, there was a piece on Today in the News about how that was illegal, the way that was handled. But let the Republicans get in, you know, it's like right away, that's okay, you know, and we have to cave into the same process. I think what we have to do as Democrats, you know, is to beat Donald Trump at his own game. We have to be not to be diabolical the way he is, but in order to convince the masses and point out each time where they're wrong, and make sure that each time that they're cited, that it resonates, that it affects somebody's thinking ability about what's going on in our global politics, and I think that's the only thing that's going to work because. Unfortunately, we have a bunch of dodos out here who believe in reality TV, and they're not looking at the traditional politician who is seasoned and has some degree of understanding about how the process works. We see somebody who was successful on television, successful in real estate, and all of a sudden, because he has this...
Allegedly.
Yeah, you're right, allegedly. Yeah, you're absolutely right. But because he has this demeanor in which he can project himself a certain way, and this cavalier New York attitude, you know, it just seems to play well across the country in terms of energizing his base. And I mean, sooner or later, it's just got to come to an end. You know, I don't think he's that invincible, but it's sad.
No, he's not at all. And people are, you know, you got some people that, like his hardcore base, you know, are drinking the Kool-Aid so much. Some of them are saying, well, it's just going to have to be tight for a little while, but he's going to get us through it. I trust he's going to get us through it. It's like, what? You're willing to have it? I mean, you know, I've heard people make comments like that. Well, it's just going to be a rough time, or, you know, they're willing to sacrifice a little bit of hardship because they believe in this guy so much. And there's
exactly.
This blind allegiance, and really it's their racism and their prejudice against the immigration. Once he said the immigration thing, you know, how he consistently attacks black athletes, black men, black people, the way he attacked LeBron out of the blue. You know, that sounded like a conversation between him and his wife the night before. And she said, I think that's great that LeBron did it. Trump got jealous and went over to the Twitter machine and had to say something nasty about LeBron, right? And which is the worst nightmare. Me and my mom were talking about that. His woman came and said something nice about him. So
exactly.
That tells you there was something going on. There was something going on upstairs in the residence that night. There was some sort of discussion that rubbed that guy the wrong way about that black man.
Oh, boy.
You know?
Yeah, it takes a woman.
So
I firmly believe that those who don't really have much more
other than
a discussion. You know,
Let me tell you something, guys. Look, I'm really bored with this conversation because, in fact, it's all about Trump. Listen, put some action into this conversation. Take a stand, okay? Give the black females in Washington, D.C., in Congress, a whole lot of support. Nancy Pelosi, not black, but Maxine Waters, and all of the, you know, the black congresswomen, they're fighting for us, and no one is recognizing them. You don't really hear about them.
Well, you kind of are, because black women are the key demographic nowadays.
I haven't mentioned one black woman yet.
There's a lot of black women now. That's the key demographic, the fastest growing.
Exactly.
Demographic with the most influence.
So why aren't we talking about them?
We're not talking about them. You're right. But people are talking about, you got the woman Stacey Abrams, who's the Democratic nominee out of Georgia, could potentially be the first African-American female governor in the country. You got Kamala Harris,
mm-hmm.
who could potentially be a candidate for president or vice president, could be one of the candidates to be on that ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So that demographic is one that is a powerful demographic, and a lot of black women are really the ones that are moving the Democratic Party now. I mean, they've had statistics about that. So
you think?
So we need to focus on that a little bit more and give them more support. Obviously, he keeps attacking Maxine Waters, so obviously she's getting to him, because you know she doesn't really care and is calling him what he is. And I think that they still, you know, she's calling for his impeachment, like the rest of them need to continue to push for hard, even though it's an uphill fight. And I agree with you, Wayne. The Democrats need to get a little bit tough. I said this before, when Obama first got elected and we had Democrats have the White House, the Senate, and the Congress, they should have just ran through the single-payer option. But
right.
I think that Obama was trying to, you know, show up, make amends, reach across the aisle, do whatever it was, and wanted to show the Republicans. And I wonder if it wasn't in the back of his mind some to show that, the first black president is going to reach out to all people, don't want to be assumed to just be the president of a certain part of the segment of society, and let the Republicans have their, you know, their input in that, and as a result, his health care was watered down consistently. And from the time they got any kind of foothold and got some seats back, they worked to derail his presidency.
Oh, no question about that. And the thing is, when you look back, they not once ever mentioned the impact that they had on him in terms of trying to get certain things done. That's the problem, you know.
Exactly.
There was an agenda early on, you know, and they got their wish. They got their persona non grata as their head person in charge, who's going to make the country great again. And then, as far as I'm concerned, he's turning the clock back. And Vladimir Putin is more my president than Donald Trump, as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, I really...
So you go down with Putin.
You know, I mean, the deal is that he's had such an impact. It is what it is, you know? So all I could say is that I just hope it... I just hope things change, man. I mean, I'm really hoping in November that there's a sea change, that there's more of a level playing field. And I think the Democrats need to stand up the way the Republicans did when Obama was large and in charge and defeat this guy who they have put before us, whether he has good intentions or not, just as payback, because it's the same game. You have to play the same game that they play. Can't be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't matter what nationality, what race. You know, who's in the... they have a common agenda, and it's all about them. They have no respect for the law. They change the rules as they go along. And then,
exactly. They change the system.
You know.
But you got to admire Wayne, and we need to play that same game, to stick to the plan. I mean, they stick to their playbook generationally. You know what I mean? It gets passed down to the older ones, the ones that are getting too old and getting ready to retire out of office, and you got the younger ones coming up, and they pick up right where that other playbook left off. They get the playbook from that older player, that politician has gone out the game, and they continue with that, you know, certain ones. They continue with that old playbook, you know. Get rid of Social Security, you know, that's their objective, right? Privatize Social Security. Paul Ryan couldn't get that done, so he's leaving office because people are starting to find out about him and see that he was really full of it, you know?
Right.
And he's one of those people that Byron was talking about that's part of that conspiracy that probably got money as well. I think we talked about that a little bit. So, you know, they always find a few that are willing to keep that mantra going, you know, as long as they could play that race card for them or play that let's make America great or let's make it so that you individuals that used to have a premium citizenship continue to have it, you know? That's why I've been trying to always go back.
Next week, you know, Bob Lowe is going to be on. He has an open letter to Donald Trump, and you want to hear this. Also, I'm campaigning. Maybe I'll run for office. But I'm serious now in thinking that I'm going to be talking to a lot of the black women in Congress, okay? And I've made a list, and we're going to be talking to them on the air. So get ready, guys, because of the fact that women will lead this, especially black women. You know that, and I know that. So we need to start including them more in the conversation, okay?
But, you know, Kay, it's interesting. I'm glad you brought this. This is the second time you brought this up during the course of the hour about, you know, the impact of women. And I'm not taking anything away from that. But I wonder if this country will ever get to the point of electing, no matter what party affiliation, a woman as president of the United States.
I'm quite sure it'll get to that point.
I mean, people of progressive thinking and a like mind, we know that we've long passed that part, you know. But I'm just talking about society at large here in the United States, the business community. You know, I still think that they look at women as objects, unfortunately. No matter how much education, it seems like the ceiling is never low enough for them to penetrate. And I just wonder, in my lifetime, if there will ever be an American woman elected president.
You know, so I think that, you know, they have to consider, that's why it has to be, would have to be a woman of a certain age, right? So it couldn't necessarily be a woman of childbearing age, because what happens when she wants to have children?
Oh, boy.
Everything else goes out the window. This is This is certainly the perspective that they
Without
have.
Without women, you wouldn't even be here.
As
so, you know,
fact,
what are you talking about?
I understand. As a matter of fact, this is what Stephanie Ruhle was talking about earlier today on her show, one of the MSNBC hosts, talking about women CEOs, that there's not that many women CEOs considering the big number. And she was talking about that was some of the things, unfortunately, that women have to consider. You know, do they, you know, it's the whole partnership of the person that you would have in your, as your spouse, your partner, the amount of time and the amount of work that's involved that would keep someone out of the home, because you have to have the right partner to hold that down, to take care of your kids and to have the home life. So that she was talking about, and God forbid, you know, you have to, you get a woman of childbearing age that wants to have kids, because unfortunately, I mean, it's a double standard, and unfortunately women have to make that decision. Do they want to devote their time to their career, or do they want to devote their time to their family? And a lot of, she was talking about how some of the women haven't, you know, haven't had kids, or some have. I mean, you have like the head of, I guess, Facebook and these other organizations, I guess Google, that have been making inroads and breaking that ceiling in terms of women who are, you know, having kids and having a family, and also being the CEO of these big, huge corporations. But certainly, you're right. I mean, you know, a lot of the men have that kind of old, very old perspective about what women's places are. But I certainly see it within the next two presidential elections. I expect that there probably would be a woman elected for president.
I know.
I mean,
there
I would
will
like
be.
To think so. I don't want
to
shout.
I would
sound
like to
like
leave
a,
you
biased,
with the thought
but.
Of. I would like to leave you with the thought of black women are, and women, period, you know, are coming into their own, into our own. And there'll be changes. There will be changes, guys. So get ready for it. And that's all I have to say. I'm bored with the whole thing.
And you were
going to
say.
Really bored up with the whole thing.
You were going to say, Wayne? What were you going to say, Wayne?
No, I was just going to say, I mean, I threw that out there because I was having a private discussion with a friend of mine who happens to listen to the show. He's in the Midwest. And the thing is that we were talking about the whole Hillary Clinton thing. And, yes, all right, we didn't come out in the numbers that we should have in areas of the country that would have taken us over the top in terms of those who supported her. But I also think that there's still a subtle agenda that, you know, in both camps, that there's a fear of having a woman running this country. I think that there are certain things that women could look at in terms of handling global affairs that might be a completely different perspective than what a man would do, you know.
Oh, thank
and I'm
you
not
very
saying
much.
That, I'm not saying that that's... Well, I mean, it's just, I'm just saying in general, I mean, if we're faced with war, obviously it doesn't matter who you're dealing with. I mean, we want somebody to defend.
How do you think you got here? How do you guys think you got here? How do you get that? How do you think you got here?
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
Well, I don't know.
Without a woman, what would you, come
you
on, you know?
We're taking the conversation.
Yeah.
No,
well,
we're taking the conversation where I wanted to go right at this particular point.
We're
taking
the conversation to the next point.
No.
So you want to say?
No, I said what I wanted to say. This is Kate Thompson, Kate Thompson Live, and I'm talking to Wayne Gilman.
Okay. So,
Byron Sargent.
Byron, you're safe. I don't know why I brought it up.
I'm going to have so many women on this show.
Sorry I brought it up. Yeah.
Well, I think in order for the paradigm shift to really take place that we are all speaking on are three factors that are unique to this nation. And once we engage them completely, these three areas, you cannot disregard racism as a key and primary issue for the United States of America. Secondly,
we cannot forget the Eric Gardners.
That's
you
right.
Know, of
rule
our community.
Of law.
Yeah.
Okay.
Respect for the Constitution, because this challenge that's going on right now with the Mueller investigation is all about the Constitution. And ultimately, that Supreme Court choice that's on the docket right now will try to turn back Roe versus Wade. And it is about women's issue. And that's the third paradigm shift that this nation is going to have to acknowledge and respect. There are more women than there are men, and that there is time for women to stand up and take charge and clean up this mess that has been made. That's it. Otherwise,
well,
this empire will fail. It can, you're
from
right,
your
Wayne.
Lips to God's
ears. Ask that question.
I hope so.
You know, it was the majority, you know, the majority of white women voted for Trump. So, I mean, there's validity in what Wayne was saying. I mean, you even have to get them on the right page where they can trust each other. I mean, it's
that's right. Step
been
that's
part
right.
of that. The same thing with people of color, you know. I mean, there's a certain amount, a certain number that was done on people not to trust their own, and not to trust their own gender or their own race. That experiment or that scheme that's been going on for hundreds of years, I mean, it's all over the world, certainly, that women are treated like second-class citizens. I mean, anytime it's big news in something like someplace like Saudi Arabia that women are getting the right to drive, I mean, just think how simplistic that is to most civilized or countries that aren't living under the cloak of some sort of religious oppression. I mean, they haven't been driving all this time. That's just, you know, I mean, there's still places like that in the world where they can't. I mean, just the fact, I mean, you know, I mean, that's someone's religion, I understand. But the whole burqa concept where you can't even see them. You can't even see what a woman looks like. You can't even, I mean, I get scared when I see people walking around with all of that, you know, head to toe, and all you're seeing is their eyes. You know, I mean, you can understand probably a little bit people who really are, diversity deficient.
Brother.
You know,
oh, brother, I don't
believe it. You get those people who are diversity deficient, as I was saying, you know, like these flyover Midwest type of places or these deep southern places where they don't see too many different types of people. Certainly not too many people wearing burkas and things like that. So
you know?
You can imagine, if I'm feeling that way, then you can imagine how someone from Iowa or Idaho or Alabama, when they see someone dressed in this traditional...
The real danger...
Hold on, let me finish.
No.
When they see someone dressed
Go ahead.
In this traditional garb of another religion and another culture. You can imagine they're intimidated with the people of color here in this country.
Yeah.
So imagine how much they're how they look at someone coming from another country wearing all black, walking around with that and praying to
the... Okay, Eric, the real danger here is the White House, is in the White House, okay? Let's leave it at that on K. Thompson Live. The real danger, present danger, is in the White House with our president, period, in, out.
Agreed.
Okay. Well, I think we're all in agreement on that one. I mean, there's no question about it. But I also agree with you, Eric. It's going to take a lot to educate the masses. I mean, it's you're right. The flyover states that we need to come together and somehow resonate a certain sense of what life is like on this planet to these people who are just blithely unaware and going about their traditional values and think that whatever they believe in and how they think is right with the world, and it's not necessarily that way at all. Hello?
Silence is golden, as they say. You hit it right on the nail on the head, as we all are in agreement, because we in order for change to take place and to stick, is indeed, I think we're being witness to it. We just keep having that faith. Remember, the women's right to vote was only several, 80 years
exactly.
ago?
Exactly. Right.
All right.
Well, there
it is.
That's it. We got to go. I want to say thank you this evening to our co-host, Mr. Byron Saunders.
Yes.
Thank you, brother.
Peace and love always.
All right, Brother Byron, we'll talk to you next week. Wayne Gilman, legendary newsman, our other co-host. Once again, it's been real as always, sir.
I'm always a pleasure, to be a participant here. And I love women.
All right. Glad to hear that, sir. All right. I am Citizen Payne. This has been the K. Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can listen to us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m., or the show is archived, so you can listen to it as many times as you want or not, or cut it off whenever you want. Do whatever you want. I'm Citizen Payne, and you will.
Thompson Live, Wednesdays, 8 to 9.
All righty. See you later. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.